We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey, everybody. Welcome in to the Week 18 edition of the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast Preview Show. I'm your host, John McKechnie, joined as always by Mario Puig. We are going to break down every single game from a fantasy and a betting perspective as we get things rolling in an unprecedented, the first ever Week 18 in the NFL. Here we go. All right, Mario, it has been a couple weeks since we last were on this podcast. A big thanks to Alan for jumping in last week. I tuned in for the show during my lengthy drive back to Atlanta. It was a lengthy pod. So, I mean, that really got me through pretty much all of North Carolina. So very, very thankful for that one. But Mario, a lot has happened since we last talked. The wheels have completely fallen off. My Baltimore Ravens, things are not going well there, but my Georgia Bulldogs have made the national championship, and your boy is hitting the road Sunday to Indianapolis to go.
Nice. I haven't been able to follow the college football season very well, but I saw that one George Pickens clip. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, Pickens is a bad dude, and I mean bad in a good way. He just shushed the Michigan just defender and then just go ahead and just knocked him right over. And there's a great clip of Jamari Sawyer completely pancaking Aiden Hutchinson, the projected maybe number one overall pick. He didn't really do a whole lot.
Yeah, that seems like a dumb one, the Hutchinson hype. I'm very skeptical of it. Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, we'll the guy was dominant. We'll unpack a lot more draft stuff here in the next couple of weeks after the season's over. Mm-hmm. But we do have one more week to go. And I say, let's go ahead and break it down. We got so we got a Saturday twofer, and then we go into a Sunday full jam-packed slate of games. So we'll get things rolling chronologically. We'll start things out. Chiefs, Broncos. Chiefs 10-point favorites on the road in this one. The Broncos just kind of a mess at this point, and that'll be kind of a recurring theme for a lot of this show. A lot of these teams kind of playing out the string here as we wind down the season. You know, the Drew Lock experiment doesn't seem to be going particularly well. The Broncos remain that quarterback away from truly being competitive. Don't know what the status is for Vic Fangio heading into next season, things like that. But when you're breaking this game down from a fantasy angle, Mario, what are you looking for specifically?
Well, the Broncos are shorthanded maybe in a couple really important ways. Obviously, the quarterback situation is bad, but they also might be without. Sorry if there was already a prognosis issued declaring Pat Surtain out, but he wasn't practicing as of yesterday. And Kareem Jackson, one of the two safeties, I'm pretty sure he's doing a pretty good job the past couple of years. He's out. So the Broncos defense, we normally think of as at the very least good against the pass, and especially like the underneath intermediate. Can't really seem to get anything going there. And the few times they've gotten beat this year, feel like it's been almost a couple months since the last time I really remember that happening, but it was downfield, like running past the safeties, getting so far down the field, you get past that padded deep coverage which is not that easy to do, especially if there's a decent pass rush that day. So with that said, if Pat Surtain is out and Kareem Jackson out, probably getting a downgrade at one of the two safety spots, that's half of their, you know, reason for strength in the first place, just being eliminated from the equation. So I happen to think that the Chiefs offense is basically not fixed. I think they have too many useless reps on the field for that to change, at least unless their strategy changes in a really pronounced way in response to the way the defenses are approaching them. They need different players than the ones that they have to break that stalemate, in my opinion. But if Pat Surtain is out, especially, the Denver Broncos secondary might not be itself, and it might just be a case where their talent is so lacking at that point that even this kind of imperfect version of the Chiefs can still light them up. So, but yeah, it feels like a lot of points for the Chiefs, but I guess the way it'll work for them to cover that is Drew Lock scoring points for the Chiefs defense, which totally possible, totally on the table here.
Yeah, it always is when he's back behind center. We know that. And you know, this is a game that, you know, that the Broncos are checking in at 7-9, so that they are pretty much eliminated. But the Chiefs obviously do have that one seed in play, and that's all the more important this season. Not that we expect the Titans to lose that game to the Texans, but the Texans can be a little bit feisty here and there.
Didn't they already lose to the Texans? They lost to the Jets. So
they can lose to some bad teams. They can beat some great teams. I mean, they have a tiebreaker over the Chiefs. Yeah.
So, anyway, yeah, the Chiefs, I expect to show up and do pretty much what they want, even though they voluntarily played DeMarcus Robinson 50 snaps a game.
Just an ongoing thing to just basically torment you over the years.
Tormenting themselves now. I'm glad that they're finally, well, they won't put it together until it's too late. They won't learn the lesson, but you can't play bad players on purpose. You can't.
It's really not a great idea, I've come to learn. But if you're looking at this one, say you're playing the Saturday slate for DFS, I know that there aren't too many regular season long redraft leagues still playing out the string this week. Any kind of like value guys that you could see from either side of this one that you'd be interested in?
Well, I don't think he's very good, but Darrell Williams should have a big game. Like, Edward Slayer is just out, right?
So I think he's been considered week to week with that collarbone. I can't imagine that he's ready to go.
Yeah, he's toast. Anyway, so Darrell Williams, I don't think he's very good, but in an NFL game, or, you know, pretty much any football game, if one side is winning by double digit points and there's any particular lead runner, like clear lead runner, then that player almost categorically is in a really good position, if only for the field positioning and the touchdowns that they can get. And to be fair to Darrell Williams, I mean, I think he's kind of a crap running back, but he is a good fullback, and specifically the pass catching he is legitimately good at. So yes. You could see him having a big game, even if the Chiefs passing game kind of goes, even if Kelce and Hill both have big games. It's hard to imagine that no running back does anything for the Chiefs in that case. On the Denver side, I don't know. Like, Albert Aquagbenoom's fast. He can score from long range. Fant, I guess, can too. But I don't know what you do with an offense like that where it's just, you know, you project them to trail the whole game but not be able to pass at all.
Right, exactly. So it's going to be a tricky one when it comes to the Broncos. And again, it all kind of starts with the quarterback, and they're a good run team, but both their running backs are banged up. Both of them listed on the injury report as of this recording. Let's get on over to our next Saturday game. And again, knocking off the rust here. Sorry, folks. This podcast, of course, presented by our friends over at WinBet. Had to throw that out there. But let's get on over to the NFC East. Cowboys, Eagles. This game sets up with the Cowboys 6.5-point favorites on the road. The Cowboys really flexed their muscles a couple of weeks ago against the Washington football team on that Sunday nighter. One of the most lopsided NFL games I think I have ever seen. Just legitimately disorienting hearing that one on the radio. Like, but I was getting home and all of a sudden the Cowboys were up like 21-0, and I wasn't even out that long. And then last week, of course, it didn't go so well against the Cardinals. So both of these teams have a lot to play for in this particular setup. The Eagles obviously in a playoff position right now, 11-5. So they're looking good. They haven't clinched just yet, I don't believe. Or maybe they've clinched the playoffs, but they're seeding.
Yeah.
is undetermined at this point. So they still have a lot to play for, and they're playing at home. Last time these two squared off, it was that Monday night game really early in the season. The Eagles looked pretty out of sorts. I think it was a week or two removed from their game against Atlanta where they looked good, but that said a little bit more about Atlanta than it did the Eagles. But the Eagles have really kind of found their groove. I'd say basically since that Lions game, they kind of got right in that one and have been a legitimate team since then. Do you think they're able to defend home field in this one against the Cowboys?
Well, Dallas's offense, I don't know if it's as bad as it looked in the Cardinals game and the whatever 5-6 games preceding the Washington game where they otherwise did very well, obviously. I think we can give enough credit to the Arizona defense and specifically point out that even though they had backup corners outside, which is infuriating to me that Dallas didn't have a better game, with that being the fact, all that the Cardinals really did to stop the Dallas offense, or, you know, the amount that I watched that I was able to see anyway, they were just kind of dropping their corners way back into deep zone coverage right off the snap. And they'd shore up the underneath where they're giving up a cushion otherwise by having their linebackers, all those linebackers, safeties in the middle field, they all, you know, stand up close to the line of scrimmage, act like they're going to pass rush at the snap. They don't rush, or they might, but they might not. They might drop back and kind of just do these zone coverages in the flats and the underneath. And Dak Prescott would drop back, and Dallas was kind of going for these downfield shots where, you know, Dak's got to set up on 7 steps or at least 5. Chandler Jones wrecked a few of those himself. And then even when they weren't dropping so far back, it's like these zone coverages, these disguised coverages would just drift into the parts of the field where Dak was waiting for these routes to break downfield. And Dallas didn't have any basic zone beaters. Like, they should have. There are certain ways that you can make a defense pay for doing that. Like, I was thinking, you know, screen passes to the running back or something. If they want to send 5, you know, just banshee pass rushers every play and send everybody else into deep zone coverage, then call some screens underneath. Let the rushers run themselves out of the play. Let those zone coverage guys get so far downfield that all of a sudden they've got 15 yards in between themselves and, you know, 2 or 3 blockers and the running back, Pollard, Zeke, didn't really matter. I think that would have worked. So it's like, on one hand, kind of a solace that I can imagine Dallas having done well in that situation, but then at the same time, they didn't do it. They didn't come up with this idea. I don't know if they ever will have, you know, like if there's a certain insight that's necessary, I have no real reason to believe Dallas will have it occur to them. Whereas I think the Eagles, you'd sooner say, are kind of overachieving coaching wise. And I don't know if it's just Sirianni. It could be, you know, I made fun of him, but he hasn't done as bad of a job as a lot of other coaches. I'm personally suspicious that maybe the offensive coordinator, the defensive coordinator are pretty good, but even so, I expect them to play better than their talent level. In Dallas, I always expect to play less than their talent level, with the exception of the defense. So as we remember for the first time, Jalen Hurts got lit up in that one. It was super ugly. It was not competitive. And then they kind of garbage timed, you know, running their way back late in the game. But that was the game where Miles Sanders had like 1 carry in the first half, and that was their only running back carry. I expect the Dallas defense to be real. I think their issues with coaching more have to do on the offensive side of the ball. And I think Hurts is that guy. I don't think he's the kind of passer who can do well against a good NFL defense when exposed to it. So if the Eagles are going to win, I think they need to run like hell and try not to throw the ball, basically. Like, anytime they throw it, they should endeavor to make it play action. Ideally like a 2nd and 5 kind of thing when they do. I think if they need to throw the ball 25 plus times, I don't think I like the Eagles any better than like 40% chance to win or something.
Right. Yeah. That tends to be not the winning recipe for Philadelphia. You know, it's all about playing defense, some ball control and running it, you know, getting Hurts in those comfortable situations. So if you're picking a quarterback from the 4 available on the Saturday slate, who would you be rolling with?
If there's no price element, I'd say Mahomes, but given the price, I'd probably say Dak. But okay, the answer could be Hurts for all I know, because if he can have a bad game passing and still run for a lot. And that's something to keep an eye on, I guess, is the Dallas COVID situation, because Parsons had it. He tested positive like a day or two ago or something. So if they're losing a bunch of their guys, then all bets are off. And if Hurts is running against like a backup defense, maybe Hurts actually, because he's presumably a decent amount cheaper than Dak, or I would assume so anyway.
Yeah, but I believe that is the case. So keep an eye there, because a shorthanded Dallas defense certainly changes the calculus in that one. Let's get on over to Sunday. Packers got things cinched up on Sunday night. They're going into Detroit to face the Lions. Lions 4-point dogs at home. Obviously, that spread, you'd expect it to be much bigger if the Packers had something to play for at this point. But I think that spread implies that the Packers aren't really going to be trotting out their stars for much of this one.
Yeah, this is finally the time to bring out the Jordan Love, Amari Rodgers lineups. I think, it's like you'd expect this to be kind of like a Lazard, maybe Marquez Valdes-Scantling, and then Amari Rodgers kind of game, or I'd hope so anyway, because if they're still giving snaps to Winfrey and St. Brown might be okay, I guess. The Green Bay one, of course. The Detroit one is obviously good. Different kind of player, but very good. But in any case, Dylan, Amari Rodgers, DeGuara, I think all those guys can produce even as backups against this Detroit defense, even with Jordan Love at quarterback, if he's in there. So maybe I'm too optimistic about that, but I just think like Green Bay's backups project fine against Detroit's starting defense.
Do they project well enough to cover that spread?
Maybe not. Like that's it could be a close game. You would expect the Green Bay offense to lose quite a bit, even if they are something other than bad in this setting. Whereas, who knows what to make of the Detroit offense, I guess, aside from St. Brown. I don't know what that Swift deal was last week. I don't know if that's Campbell. I like Dan Campbell. I'm not saying he sucks for this, but that was kind of a stupid thing to me, because it's like, if he's too fragile to put on the field, then just put him on the shelf for next year. Just stop pretending this matters. It doesn't matter. Just leave him on the shelf. But they had to kind of do this thing where, oh, he's playing, but sometimes these coaches have a dumb, you can't make the club in the tub kind of thing. They're really insistent on this culture of playing hurt and, not telling anyone when you are hurt and always assuming you're going to play if you're hurt, things like that. And I don't know if it was like, well, Swift, if you want more than 4 carries, you got to give us a full practice this week. Then, I'm doing this to set an example to the rest of the team or something. And I guess if Dan Campbell was doing that, that's like a reason. I still think it's stupid, but it makes more sense than any other thing. If Swift practices this week, maybe they use him more. I don't know. It's annoying that they also might be doing like the halfway thing, like limiting his workload to limit his exposure to injury, but also putting him out there to get hurt just in case. So stupid. But if they give it to Jamal Williams, fine. If he's Jamal Williams against the Packers backups, maybe he can look decent in a game like that. But Jamal Williams is so bad. I'm so sick of this.
Speaking of making things in tubs, I did watch Fight Club last night for the first time in like a decade. Still good.
What did they, was that bombs?
I think they weren't they like making soap and then, yeah, I think.
Okay.
Then,
yeah. I didn't remember the tub detail. I remember the ending. I haven't watched that in like 20 years.
Shout out to the Pixies. One of the best ending music. Oh my gosh. Yeah. But let's circle back here. You guys, I think, might have touched on it a little bit last week because you and Alan were talking on some dynasty and looking ahead to next year. What's the current pulse in your mind when it comes to Amon-Ra St. Brown as it pertains to next season? Because obviously so much of his late season breakout has had to do with the absence of TJ Hockenson and the lack of any real other weapons. But I think you could also argue, and that's going to be a talking point for anyone that's trying to fade St. Brown for next year. But I think at the same time, you look at his prospect profile, nothing totally stands out as far as the athleticism, but that was a guy that was the best player or best receiver at the very least on USC from the time he was a true freshman. So I believe that like the talent and just sheer like kind of craft is there with St. Brown.
Yeah. So I was a little concerned about him coming into this year, because the quarterback play is really bad there. We had reason to believe Swift and Hockenson would take up a certain share of the offense. There was a point when we were still thinking, because we had reason to believe that Tyrell Williams and Breshad Perriman and
Josh Reynolds? Maybe.
I was thinking like for some reason they were trying to run out like Trinity Benson and stuff. Like it didn't seem like they had any idea what they were doing with their receivers. And we have to figure out, not just who these players are, but what the teams, the coaches are liable to do with them. And that's always a very different question of like what could happen here. Because if we're talking about what could happen, I think both of us always liked St. Brown. I mean, I was projecting him as a high second round pick before his pro day, and then he ran the 4.6. And even at that point, as much as that's not what you want to see, and as much as that kind of makes it hard for him to be an outside receiver, even in that case, we always had reason to believe, well, still, if he gets slot snaps, it's fine. It's not going to matter that he's, quote, too slow or not very big. And the slot, it's going to work. And as far as playing wide receiver goes, he's almost indisputably good. The question is, does he not have good enough athletic tools for it to matter? Will he get to the league, know all the right answers, and just not be able to put it to use because he's too slow or too small or whatever? In the slot, that never applied. So once the Lions demonstrated their commitment to him by giving him that role, pretty much the only concern for me at that point was like, well, what about this quarterback now? Like, what is a slot receiver in any particular offense going to be able to do in an offense with a baseline of like 58% completed at 6.3 yards per pass? It's just kind of hard to work with that when you're not a guy who gets touchdowns, basically. But St. Brown, I think, has turned out to be so good that it doesn't matter. I mean, if you can produce with Tim Boyle at quarterback, it doesn't matter if you add, you know, Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce to that offense in the offseason. Like, a player who can do that will get the ball. And it's exactly what happened at USC, where he was a better player than Michael Pittman. And the physical tools are better in Pittman's case, which is why he was picked higher. But we're seeing, I think we've seen anyway, that if you give St. Brown the slot role, it doesn't matter that he has lesser tools than other players. It only matters if he has to play outside, which he doesn't, so it's a moot point.
I might be way off in terms of projecting ADP going into next year, but St. Brown or Tyler Boyd?
Yeah, so it's tough because St. Brown's doing great and he is good, but there's also the risk that he's a little overpriced. I guess in PPR, you don't really sweat it too much. Like, he's going to get the catches, I think. It's just, if he has a bad 2022 season relative to expectations, it might be because he averaged like 8.5 yards a catch and only had 3 or 4 touchdowns again. But yeah, I think if he's going in like the higher than the 6th round or something, I guess that's where I get kind of scared. Not because I feel confident in fading him, because the player I love, it's the situation that I get worried about. But
right,
it's kind of hard for me to argue against it because he's putting up top 15 receiver numbers in PPR with Tim Boyle as his quarterback. It's like, he can't fail at that point.
He's been an absolute best ball savior late in the season, you know, because you were probably able to get him with like your last pick, second to last.
He was going pretty expensive, actually. Like, he was going in like the 13th or the, like, not that much later than like Rondale Moore or something. And it looked until those. So you had to make the playoffs and then he was awesome. It might have been a little bit of a, you know, if you had like Cooper Kupp and Cordarrelle or something like that, then your team was unstoppable when you made the playoffs almost because of St. Brown, even if he didn't really do a whole lot before then.
Right, exactly. So, if you did make that cutoff point, that then St. Brown certainly delivered for you late. Viewer Rodney Mosley wants to know, week 18 running back Zeke and Gibson, Melvin Gordon, I'm guessing Javonte Williams, Chuba Hubbard. He needs 3 of these. League goes every single week, and total points is accounted for as the winning element here.
So, John, we would say Zeke and Gibson, right? And then I'm not picking Hubbard, so I guess I got to pick one of the Broncos running backs, which is impossible. I guess I'd go Javonte in the last one just because I don't know. I mean, if he plays, I go Javonte in addition to Zeke and Gibson.
Exactly. So maybe the injury report will kind of make your decision for you. But yeah, I would look at one of those two Denver options as the number 3 in that grouping. Because yeah, Chuba Hubbard cannot really trust. I can't really trust anything going on in Carolina right now. It is an abject. It's really bad. You know, they're lucky that the Jaguars exist, basically, is what I'm trying to say there. All right, let's keep on moving here. Next game up, we got Colts, Jags. Colts 15-point favorites in this one.
I want the Jags to win so bad, but it's just completely impossible. It would have been just so funny to see the playoff havoc that would result from that. Anyway, yeah, Jags still don't have an NFL offense, so the Colts will probably maybe 16 is too many points, but it's hard to say no exactly.
Right. It you know, the Jags have proven to be an annoying team on occasion when they are, you know, getting a huge number, but other times they look completely incapable of doing anything, and therefore that even laying 20 points seems okay against them.
Yeah, I was getting so mad about Carson Wentz earlier this morning. His numbers are going to trick people into thinking he did well because he had like 26 touchdowns to 7 interceptions or whatever. He's so bad. He's so bad. I hate it so much. Anyway,
I'm mad at myself for like I had like a month where I was like, was I wrong about Carson Wentz?
It's reasonable. Asking the question is not unreasonable. You know, you have to ask yourself whether you're wrong all the time just to make sure you're not missing something. But yeah, if there's going to be a media campaign about how like we got to get Carson Wentz more help, I'm going to absolutely lose my mind.
Yeah,
he's so bad. Oh my
yeah,
god.
Yeah, he's like you can be a winning team with him, but he's not the reason why you're winning, basically.
Yeah, you need a Jonathan Taylor to be a winning team with him, and MVP, the people who are smart enough to know the way MVP really works might have a problem with that statement, but who cares?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. Oh, exactly. I know what you're saying there. Let's get on over. We got football team going up against the Giants in this one. The Giants 7-point dogs at home.
Oh, man. Yeah, Charles McDonald said this, but not, I wasn't the one who said this first, but Joe Judge is so funny and just lame because he's the kind of tough guy who exudes also, despite being, you know, hard ass tough guy all the time, he also exudes at all times the fact that he is actually deeply terrified and does not believe in himself, which makes for a very treacherous kind of person, you know? It's like he's a... Well, anyway, I was going to come up with a very obscure reference, but that would just confuse everybody and alienate the podcast listeners even more. So I'll just say Ron Rivera is maybe not a great coach. Like, I don't think he's a good coach, but players always play hard for him. And he's not like a fundamentally loathsome person. So I think Washington is going to show up to play. I don't know if the Giants will. Maybe they will. But even if the Giants show up to play, I don't think they can really do anything with a team like this. And I also think Washington could just kind of stomp them.
Well, and you know, you look at the quarterback situation in New York, it wasn't great with Daniel Jones there. And now they're rolling out Jake Fromm. Always a soft spot for old
that
Jake
Glennon
Fromm,
game against Chicago was so great. They're just clearly trying to click simulate end of game, you know.
Please get this over with. At this point, though, it, you know, with Fromm being out there expectedly, can you feel good about starting Saquon Barkley this week? Just because the Washington just like won't have to worry about the pass at all.
Yeah, I don't know. Saquon's so hard to think through because he's just on one of the worst teams possible for a guy like himself. You know, it's like he's got all this theoretical talent, all this big playability. And it's so much of what could make him a good player is moot on a team like this one. And you can't really say that he stands no chance because he only needs that gap in the defense. You know, he can run through it if it ever happens, but it hasn't really happened this year. And last week's game only really worked and in a lot of ways turned out to be a best case scenario for him this year because the Giants were trying to run out the clock and end the game rather than actually compete. They had like, Mike Glennon had like as many sacks as dropbacks at one point in that game, in addition to being like two of whatever, four for 2 yards and an interception. And the Giants gave him and Devontae Booker a ton of carries because they were like, let's just Joe Judge already got told he's not getting fired, so he doesn't care. Just end the game, get out of here. Joe's doing fine. You all can do whatever. So anyway, I think
yourselves.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I think, you know, Barkley's still a good player, but I'm pretty skeptical that there's much he can control about his situation.
Exactly. That is always like the, you know, the important overarching detail when it comes to these running backs. Obviously Saquon is so talented, but the team context around him is really, really just, it's something that just kind of saps all the upside that he has theoretically. Before we get on over to our next game, we got a message from our sponsors over at Blue Wire.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, But it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Moving on over, we got Bears, Vikings. Vikings 4-point favorites in this one at home. Your thoughts?
Sorry, which game was this?
This is Bears-Vikings in Minnesota. Yeah.
So I don't know what to make of the Zimmer stuff. You know, like him being fired makes a lot of sense. But I can't tell what the team is going to do or like what they consider in their best interests or whatever. So if they went out there and played hard and treated it like a playoff game, that wouldn't be terribly shocking to me, even though they're obviously not in the playoff hunt. Also wouldn't be that shocking if Zimmer's kind of checked out and so is the team. I don't know how to anticipate all that. The Bears have been showing up and playing the way they have amidst hopelessness all year, and yet they have a certain nature that we can probably expect from them. If we have to think about Vikings starters versus Bears starters, Vikings role, if there's weird secondary details affecting things, I guess that's how it gets more complicated. But I really don't know how to see that ahead of time.
Yeah, I like the way this sets up for Minnesota. Again, you know, with them kind of playing out the string here, getting eliminated from the playoff contention last weekend, and you know, having to deal with 60 minutes of Sean Mannion, you know, how much zest are they going to be bringing to the field on Sunday? But
they might play hard for Zimmer too. I don't want to, like, Zimmer's, he seems like he's not the easiest guy to play for, but he's been around a long time, Dallas and Cincinnati. Never heard anything about the players anything but liking him, so they might play pretty hard even though it's a meaningless game.
That's a good point, so keep an eye there. But yeah, I think I'm siding with the Vikings in that one as well. Let's get on over. Titans, Texans. We alluded to this one earlier in the show. Titans 10-point favorites in this one. So your thoughts here, anything from a fantasy perspective to keep an eye for in particular?
I mean, it seems like in games where the Titans have the field position and time of possession, overall script advantage, Deontay Foreman, and if they turn that advantage into a win, Deontay Foreman seems like he's pretty reliable once he gets past that like 12 carry mark, like not to rule out him having a big play before then, but he seems to start out pretty sluggishly a lot of the times. And then if he can wear down the defense by getting close to 20 carries, he tends to push for that 100 yards. And I see no reason why he shouldn't do it here. The way it wouldn't happen, I guess, is if Hilliard and McNichols get in the way somehow, or if the Houston defense somehow just shows up and plays the run really, really well. I don't expect the Texans to show up flat or anything. If anything, it seems like because they're a replacements roster, it's like they play hard because it's their jobs. You know, it's like they're trying to get signed next year, even though they don't respect the coach that they're playing for. So the Texans aren't just going to lay down. And if Tennessee needs to run as much as they tend to need to run, I'm kind of skeptical about the 11 points, but And not to take all credit away from Davis Mills, but I don't think he's good. I think he's doing a good job. He's
better than bad. I'll say that.
Yeah, he's better than bad, and he's done a really good job. That's for the circumstances, though, not like in general. I don't think he's at a point where we say he's going to do well against this good defense. That happened against the Patriots, obviously, but even that game was kind of just like tossed up some bombs on like 25 attempts and a few of them landed. And if even Drew Locke had a couple huge games his rookie year, you know. So going into a broader sample of exposure, playing against the Tennessee defense that won't give them, it's not going to give them any, you know, second and threes, second and fours. Like, that's not going to happen. They're not going to let them run. So Davis Mills is going to have to throw the ball. I don't know if Fulton's going to get Christian Fulton. I don't know if he's the kind of guy to stop Cooks. Probably not. Cooks doesn't get stopped by that many players. But I don't really expect the broader Texans offense to do anything. Like, I don't see anybody but Cooks playing well here. And sometimes even when Cooks plays well, the rest of the team lets him down. So that all seems more likely to me than the Texans making a game of it.
Yeah, it's been frustrating to see a good Brandon Cooks season kind of frittered away down for...
Yeah, how dispiriting it is that he should have been in this Houston team and seen the way they were doing the fire sale. And he should have been like, yeah, let me out too. Let me out. Yeah. He's been traded so many times. He was like, just leave me on the crap team. I just don't want to move.
Yeah, moving does suck. So, like, you know, there's
I'd rather play for the Texans than move, he said.
And you know what, folks? You got to respect that. Before we get on over to our next game, and one last detail here, looking ahead a little bit for the Titans, say that they do lock up that number one seed. Where are you with them in the AFC playoff picture, provided that Derrick Henry comes back?
It's not as insane as the Cam Akers thing, but it's still pretty insane to me. And I really like Derrick Henry. I hope that they don't do something that puts him at long-term risk. And I'm kind of worried that they are. I don't think he's replaceable. I don't think that, you know, Deontay Foreman having a couple good games and the Titans having a good roster still, that doesn't show that they don't need Henry. That's not the case at all. They will not replace Henry, and they are weaker without him. But yeah, if they put him back out there on 1.5 feet and he just like breaks some other part of it or something, I'm going to be livid. So hoping for the best there, but I'm not really expecting the best. The one thing about the Titans I'll say otherwise is their defense is a lot better than I expected it to be this year, particularly against the run, but not just against the run. They're better against the pass too than I thought they'd be. Like, Christian Fulton turning into a really good corner has meant a lot to them. It's basically bailed them out for cutting Adoree Jackson. So they have a decent pass defense, a really good run defense. They have a couple wreckers. You know, Jeffrey Simmons, he's not exactly
a beast.
He's not like on the Chris Jones level, at least not yet, but he is one of those guys who he is capable of having games where he kind of just negates three or four of your drives as an offense. So a guy like that in the playoffs is really different, really dangerous. You know, small sample size, a guy like that can just take over a setting. So as long as their defense is good and as long as AJ Brown is getting them first downs and then touchdowns, that might be enough, at least, you know, in a series of 1-0 scenarios where you only have to win one game and you can, where luck matters more basically than in the regular season. They seem pretty dangerous, and Vrabel I've been critical of in the past, but if he just had somebody else manage his personnel for him, handle his free agent signings, his drafts for him, he would be a much better version of himself, because he seems to really come up with it seems like he does a good job of not just keeping the team motivated and focused. It seems like he comes up with just really good like one-off ambush tactics. Like he doesn't have like systemic details that you attribute to like his football philosophy or something. It's just like there's a series of anecdotes where it's like he came up with this good idea that the other team didn't expect. So he's a dangerous coach in the playoffs too, in addition to the, you know, their overall nature making them dangerous there.
Yeah, and he knows how to do he had like the great clock manipulation a couple years ago. Like
he's got like these Kevin Byard fake punt plays that show up every once in a while that are always awesome.
Sometimes Derrick Henry will throw a touchdown and break your heart, and you know, all sorts of good stuff.
Yeah, so he's wily as hell, and they play hard, so that makes them dangerous as long as they have AJ Brown. If they don't have Brown, then they suck again.
Yes, that is something that you cannot argue. Before we get on over to our next game, got a message from our friends over at WinBet. If there's one thing we appreciate here at RotoWire, it's making good decisions, and even more so, making the right decision. Listen up, folks. I have an incredible offer for you with RotoWire's newest partner, WinBet, the premier digital casino and sportsbook app. WinBet is now the exclusive sponsor for RotoWire's fantasy podcasts. WinBet brings you all the latest action with a user-friendly interface, moneyline bets, boosted parlays, over-unders, round robins, live betting, and so much more at your fingertips. Want a break from sports betting? Head into WinBet's digital casino and take a spin on roulette. Double down in blackjack, slam the slots, or try your hand at baccarat. WinBet is currently available in 7 states. I remember back in the day when it was just 6 states. 7 states: Arizona, Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee, and Virginia, while rapidly expanding. At WinBet, the possibilities are limitless. WinBet is currently offering all RotoWire listeners a risk-free bet up to $500 on your first wager. Download WinBet now. That's WYNNBET, WinBet, the exclusive partner for RotoWire's fantasy podcast. Also got a message from our friends over at HOFR. This episode of the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast is brought to you by HOFR, Daily Fantasy Sports Redefined. No confusing salary caps, no annoying player drafts, just simple multiple choice questions on the stats you know and the players you love. That's right. The majority of HOFR contests focus on single sporting events and only feature questions about popular players and recognizable stats, allowing users to make their picks confidently and quickly. Plus, you never play against the house or versus those fantasy sharks. The playing field is a level for even the most amateur user to find him or herself landing in the money. Unlike those other apps where an incorrect answer can end your night, on HOFR, incorrect answers never eliminate you from the competition. I played the other night, and the questions were as simple as, how many touchdowns will Tom Brady throw, and which player will have the most rushing yards? So make your NFL Sunday picks with confidence and ease on HOFR. So do not wait around for another second. Download HOFR, that's HOFR, from the Apple App Store or Google Play Store right now. HOFR, it's everything the fantasy sports world has been waiting for. All right, Mario, keeping things rolling here. We got a bunch of games to get to before we sign off. Ravens, Steelers. Ravens, 5.5-point favorites in this one. Looks like it's going to be the Tyler Huntley show again, from what I understand. And that this will be, you know, the Ravens, that they are playing at home. They have a slim chance of postseason hope. They need some crazy stuff to happen. I think they need some help from the Jaguars. So not really holding my breath there, but what are your expectations on this game, and also what could be Ben Roethlisberger's final game as a Steeler?
The Steelers need that Jacksonville win too, right? So is that both of them would need Jacksonville to win to have a chance?
Boy, that's a tough.
It doesn't matter. I just didn't know if it was like there was a, if they've been talking about this a lot and everybody memorized the answers already. Anyway, this is going to be a very hard fought game. I'm trying to look at the chronology of these games. Like there's no unfolding of events. Yeah, it's an early game. So yeah, this is going to be a really hard fought game. There's probably going to be guys like doing late hits and stuff. The Ravens, cool. The Ravens, you know, John Harbaugh irritates me with the way that he stands by Greg Roman, basically because he's a family friend. And, you know, I'm sure Roman has moments of insight that impress Harbaugh, but I really think that they're just absolutely killing the team and wasting Lamar Jackson's career with that idiot running the offense. And with that said, as much as I find that to be a really egregious crime, John Harbaugh is second to nobody as far as like getting his team to just show up and play like a bunch of psychos no matter how badly their season is going.
Oh, yeah. They were my best bet last week. Like all of the money was on the Rams covering that spread, and it's like wait, that's body clock game for the Rams. The Ravens are gonna play them close.
Yeah, and they play just, you know, kamikaze all the time no matter how much they're getting embarrassed or how long they've been out of the playoffs. It's just they play crazy. So now that they have that plus the incentive to actually show up, like I have no doubt that, you know, both of these coaches are going to get both of these teams in a playoff mindset, even though they might both miss the playoffs, no matter who wins this game. So it's going to be fought harder than basically any game this week, I think. I don't know what sort of outcome that trends toward. I'm not so optimistic for the Ravens personally, and I know that the spread is 5.5, 6, but if a game must be a war of attrition between these two teams, I do worry more about Huntley than Roethlisberger, because Roethlisberger's toast, obviously, but he's still smart enough to avoid turnovers. And, you know, it's why he has, even going back to last year, like 30 touchdowns to 12 interceptions or whatever, because he doesn't really screw up. He misses opportunities. That's screwing up, I guess, to be pedantic, but he doesn't really turn the ball over that much. So Huntley, like, he's a great backup for the Ravens, and he's played admirably, but I don't think he's very good. I think he's only a good backup, and specifically he cannot throw downfield. And nope. I think that, people were I saw Charles Woodson had some quote like, you know, Tyler Huntley's been a better passer than Lamar Jackson. No, Lamar
Jackson. Man. People need to get off that. It's not good.
And this is Roman is horrible. It is really irritating and offensive to me how Greg Roman was able to call all this time an offense that got these short routes, these like off coverage, suicide blitz beating plays where they're throwing these short drag routes, slants, hooks, whatever, to these receivers because Huntley cannot throw downfield. They started calling those plays when they should have looked at Lamar Jackson saying, like, you know, wow, those corners are playing 8-12 yards off the line of scrimmage every single play. Every single play, they just start drifting back. They don't come up and respect the cushions. They could have just called the plays that they've been calling with Huntley with Lamar, and a lot of receivers would have been open who were not this year. And so that worked for one or two games, but then defenses realized, oh, Huntley can't throw 12 yards. Let's just sit underneath. So now the underneath isn't working. There's no deep game to tap into. I don't think he's a good enough runner to make up for the difference. I actually think the Ravens offense is going to struggle in this one. So I think the spread is assuming that the Ravens offense won't struggle and that the Steelers offense will. I think they'll both struggle. And if they both must struggle, I trust more the side with Ben Roethlisberger and Najee Harris than the one with Huntley and Devontae Freeman. No offense to the second group.
Yeah, no, that's totally fair. It's a ragtag bunch. It's kind of a miracle that the Ravens are even in this spot. It's been brutal last month stretch, but every game for the most part, other than the Cincinnati game up in Cincinnati, has been at least competitive. I don't know. We'll see. I'm expecting a close one. I think that's probably too many points to be giving.
Are you somehow going to this too?
I will be on the road, actually. And I think that there is a Steelers fan in my group that also went to Georgia. So I think we're getting an octagon set up at the Airbnb.
Yeah, I was going to say, I can see you doing like the Will Ferrell helicopter thing. Like, you're getting picked up at the Georgia stadium and flown to the Northeast.
And then I get the most Sizzlack fan man, like, and I'll just like float my way into Indianapolis.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
I'll have to float my way into Baltimore and like save Tyler Huntley from getting sacked by TJ Watt and letting Watt set.
Oh, set God, I hate that. I hate that. hate that family. Anyway,
they're just so extra. All right, let's keep rolling. Sticking in the AFC North, Bengals, Browns, 6-point favorites in this one. That obviously has everything to do with the Bengals pretty much resting on their laurels this week, not expecting Burrow to be out there, not expecting Mixon. Jamar Chase might play a little bit, but it looks like it's going to be, you know, week four of the preseason, or what used to be week four of the preseason for the Bengals.
Yeah, I'm just realizing I forgot to actually answer the question you asked about St. Brown versus Tyler Boyd. I think I would go with Tyler Boyd go back.
All right. There it is.
anyway, Cleveland is a mess. Baker Mayfield, I was feeling sorry for him the other day because it's been so brutal watching him. I mean, pretty much all year, but lately you could see kind of like, I think, a little bit of a sign of sort of like depression, self-awareness, which I don't think Baker Mayfield has experienced in his entire life. You could kind of see it getting into his face. Like, you could see him sort of realizing like, oh man, it's not going to be okay. I'm not the person that I've consumed my entire, my entire conception of identity around this idea of myself, and it's not true. And you could see him start to understand it. And it's really pitiful and sad when you see someone who's that invested in like their, sense of self in that way, and they see it negated and they're on national television for everybody to watch it. That was kind of painful, but Baker Mayfield has regrouped, and he's going on the offensive again and saying like, hey man, I'm actually doing a great job. Kevin Stefanski is the problem here. I can't believe Kevin keeps screwing me over like this. And he's whining to the press every chance he gets. Like, as soon as that Mary Kay Cabot report from whatever a month ago of like, some are saying that Kevin Stefanski could do more to free up Baker Mayfield. It's like, wow, who could have leaked that to the writer?
Baker Mayfield in a mustache and a trench coat.
Yeah, it's not
Odell Beckham's, had that look before.
Yeah, it's not Odell Beckham's dad who's leaking that to her, you know? And it's and there's no one else who believes in him other than himself. So obviously it was him. But yeah, he's like going on the war path again about how like Stefanski let me down. And it's like, all right, well, now I don't feel sorry for him anymore. He's kind of just being a giant baby. But in any case, it looks like Baker's alienation with Stefanski is going to save them from giving him a contract extension that they would have deeply regretted, I don't know, next October. So it looks like he's on the way out. And I don't know in the meantime what their internal situation is. It's like, apparently Mayfield's going to play in this game, but even that is going to be a weird, awkward affair.
Oh, I thought he was getting surgery.
No, that makes more sense. So yeah, he's just out. I don't know. Keenum against the backup Bengals. Maybe. I don't know. But generally, I guess we're expecting the run game to sort of just do whatever they want, even if it's Dearness Johnson doing it.
Yeah, I would just mostly recommend not betting this game. That's my professional advice here. I think that there's just too many unknowns on both sides.
Watch the Browns throw for like 400 yards with Keenum and then Baker.
Anthony Schwartz season. Let's get it going. Let's see here. Before we get on over to our next game, which will be Panthers Bucks, we got another message from our friends over at Skybox Sports. Skybox Sports Network is your hardcore source for odds and sports tickers. Skybox Sports has been creating an entertaining and relevant products for restaurants, sports bars, casinos, racing sports books, arenas, and stadiums for years. Now you can bring a little bit of Vegas into your own fan cave. Skybox's low-cost and state-of-the-art Wi-Fi platform is a simple and affordable plug-and-play and activate format. Skybox Sports tickers bring you live odds, propositions, fantasy scores, hires, fires, trades, breaking news, recaps, and in-depth coverage for the NFL, NBA, MLB, NHL, PGA, NASCAR, UFC, specialty events, and more. Visit SkyboxSportsNetwork.com. That's SkyboxSportsNetwork.com. And use promo code ROTOWIRE for a 5% discount off your order. All right, moving on. NFC South. We got Panthers, Bucks, 7.5-point favorites. Mario, we were talking a little bit before the show. There's some things going on in Tampa. Would you care to share with the class?
Antonio Brown, something obviously happened with him and the Buccaneers last Sunday. Pretty cool, in my opinion. I thought it was great.
Of all of his antics, I think getting shirtless and rage quitting mid-game, I think might be the best one.
Yeah, it was. I really appreciate the whole just the whole fact of the situation, including how when it all came up and when people like see the tweet come across, like Antonio Brown took off his shirt and left, said he quits, and like I read that and I was just like, yeah, well, sure, yeah, that's not that weird. So yeah, that's awesome in my opinion. It's a great bit, and it kind of seems like he didn't want to play and he got mad at the team pressuring him to play, and the team, Arians specifically wanted him to go out, and like Brown was claiming they were injecting him with this like experimental painkiller that the players union said players are not to be taking. I don't know about any of that, but Arians said for some reason him and the GM this morning just said like we didn't know he was hurt. So that's a strange position to take after you just had him on the injury report for 6 weeks. And now they got these text messages about him saying to Arians, like, I'm hurt, coach. I don't know if I could play. And him being like, okay, well, still show up. And now they're trying to say like, oh, I didn't read that. That was my intern who texted back to AB. So anyway, the Buccaneers are toast, folks. They're going to make into the playoffs, obviously, and can't quite truly count them out. But Tom Brady looked a lot worse when he was in New England with Jacoby Myers as his best receiver. Going from Antonio Brown, Chris Godwin, Mike Evans, and Rob Gronkowski to just the latter two, I think is enough to make them just about toast. And, you know, relative to like the top five ambitions that they had, they'll rake in this game, obviously, because the Panthers are just an incredible joke of an organization. But could be sluggish, might need both Ronald Jones and Keyshawn Vaughn to go over 10, 12 carries in this one. But yeah, it's gotta be a mess inside that organization right now.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. It's very volatile. And I think that there's still probably more to come out from this Antonio Brown story and how that affects them, right before the postseason. It will certainly be pretty fascinating. Let's keep on rolling here. We got a few more games to hit before we sign off. We got Pats, Dolphins, 6.5 point dogs at home. Dolphins got a little bit exposed a week ago after their impressive win streak.
Yeah, they're not very good. They're the kind of team that can eat up a bad team, even though they are bad themselves. Them being actually bad comes to bite them a little bit. Last week, obviously, and this week too. I basically think the Patriots defense plus the Harris Stevenson run game covers that pretty easily.
Yeah, I could see that as well. Yeah, they'll just pound on the ground, get it done that way. Damian Harris has been awesome down the stretch, from Rhamondre Stevenson proven to be a good player for his own right as well. Saints, Falcons 4.5 point dogs at home. Falcons managed to cover the spread, a gigantic spread, but they covered nonetheless a week ago in Buffalo, and they kind of got a little bit jobbed on that Matt Ryan touchdown that wasn't a touchdown, and some taunting happened. I think I mostly watched that game because that was the local game down here in Atlanta, but otherwise wouldn't have tuned in too much. But anywho, your thoughts on this one going up against the Saints?
Yeah, the Falcons have no talent, but you can tell from the record that they're reasonably well coached. I think Arthur Smith is doing a good job, and if he gets a better roster, he'll be one of those guys that you just kind of always worry about playing and especially covering against. So I don't know. I don't see much reason to think that the Saints just roll here. Matt Ryan has had a really bad year, but it's not because he's playing poorly. It's just the offensive line sucks. But bad offensive line is not good when you go against a Cam Hayward guy. Like Cameron Jordan. He's definitely in that class of interior linemen pretty close. Like he used to be Jeff Simmons, basically. Like and he's still really good, even though he's lost a little bit. So Saints might just wreck them in the trenches, but the Falcons have been showing up and playing hard all year, and they have bad players, but they never look quite as bad as they should.
Yeah, and I believe the Falcons, one of the more surprising results of the season, went into New Orleans as like 10-point dogs and won earlier this season.
Am I right? Yeah, they could win this game too. I mean, I would not that I want to bet on the Falcons either, but I don't want to bet on the Saints.
Yeah, I'm not comfortable doing that either on the road, to add a detail there. All right, next, we got Bills, Jets. Bills, 16-point favorites in this one. The Jets showed a little bit of something last week. Maybe that had more to do with the sideshow going on the Tampa Bay sideline, but it's close. It's a close game. But how do the Bills cover such a large number?
Let's see. The Bills, do they have seeding to still play for in this game? I can't tell. They're at 4 seed.
I think that they got a win because that they have the same record as the Patriots.
Oh, the Patriots can catch them. Yeah. So, Bills cover.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So is there anything to play for? Yes. Then yes, the Bills absolutely smoke the Jets. I see that happening as well. All right. Got a good one coming up here. 49ers, Rams, 4-point favorites at home.
Yeah, Matt Stafford has not looked right to me for like 2 months. And if he doesn't get Cooper Kupp going, he's liable to just kind of not do anything for a while. And I'm not blaming the receivers for that. Like, I think, you know, Stafford might be hurt or whatever. Maybe that has something to do with it. But sometimes he just seems to be doing stupid things too. So that's a little frustrating. It's possible, though, that Stafford, I don't know, like maybe he does his dumb things when he's feeling comfortable, like he's feeling like he has a safe spot to experiment or something. I don't know. I shouldn't try to speculate on his psychological state or whatever too much. But in any case, this game seems pretty serious. Like, so maybe he'll be more focused than he has been in some games. And if so, he should be fine here. But he should have been much cleaner against the Ravens than he was too. I think you can both give credit to the Ravens and say Stafford didn't play well enough. So he needs to play better here. I guess maybe he doesn't really need to, because Trey Lance, even though he did good last week, and even though he should have been starting all year over Jimmy Garoppolo, it's still a tough spot for him to be in this game a game of the stakes, especially when just 2 weeks ago his coach was finding any excuse possible to not put him on the field. So it's a dangerous spot for the Rams, but they should take care of it, especially with the 49ers defense so beat up at corner.
Yeah, that, I'm expecting that the Rams to take care of business here as well and cover that number. Next up, we got Seahawks, Cardinals. Cardinals 6.5-point favorites in that one. I know you're not this type of guy, but you're welcome to go ahead and victory lap Rashad Penny a little bit.
I mean, I'll victory lap something, but yeah, I can't do it with him this year because I thought he was busted, you know.
Okay.
I always liked him as well. I was worried that he just had like a straight up screwed up knee, you know, something like that. Mm-hmm. So it's nice to see him doing so well. I really think he's always been this guy, and that people just, you know, criticized him for not running the same way and going doosh, 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 as Chris Carson. It's like, you gotta make the truck sounds or else I can't enjoy a running back. no matter if he's averaging 5 or more yards a carry, it's like, he's got to go doosh, doosh, doosh. So anyway, yeah, Penny runs around people and runs past them instead of going doosh, doosh, doosh. And that makes people upset sometimes, but he's a good player. The one thing is, I don't know if it's a good setting for him. Like if the Cardinals play the Seahawks the same way they played the Cowboys, that might be just an impossible situation for the Seahawks offense, because Russell Wilson basically has the deep ball and not much else. And if you're dropping back all your coverage immediately every snap, that type of pass doesn't really work unless you have a counter move, and they don't. And the closest to a counter they have is the run game, which if you send like 6 guys at the line of scrimmage and drop back the other 5 just way deep every play, I think that can make it tough on the Seahawks. But if they get some favorable box setups, if they have more, you know, if they have blockers more than the defenders that they're trying to run block, I think Penny can run on this defense. This defense is not exactly good against the run. It needs to kind of sell out a little bit against the run to show up strong in that part of the field.
Okay. All right. That all checks out, certainly. And then rounding things out, a game where theoretically both teams could just kneel it out, have a tie, nice little gentleman's tie, and both make the postseason.
Chargers-Raiders. Is that the thing, or is it also more specifically that they need to tie for either of them to get in? Like, do they both need to tie to get in, or is that the weird detail?
I'm not
totally
sure.
That would be amazing if the Jags win and it's like, okay, the Chargers and the Raiders both need to tie, or else neither of them get in. That would be amazing. Anyway, I think the Raiders have some issues despite beating the Colts. And I don't think that Justin Herbert is enough like Carson Wentz for them to be safe here.
Yeah, I take the Chargers. I'm kind of amazed that the Raiders are even in this position.
Nate Hobbs not playing really matters. If he's out, like he's a really good player despite his stupid thing. So they lose a really good player if he's out.
Yeah, that's a big problem. You know, the replacement for him against Herbert, that does not bode
Keenan
well
Allen specifically.
For the Raiders. Yeah, exactly. So that's going to be tough for the Raiders. That's going to do it for us here. For Mario Puig, I'm John McCackney. Thanks for listening to the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast, the preview show for Week 18, brought to you again by our friends over at WinBet. Thanks for listening.
Try RotoWire today, free for 10 days. Get our premium tools, rankings, analysis, and breaking news alerts. No credit card required. Go to rotowire.com/try.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.